Welcome to Hello Tangent, the podcast where we talk about movies, video games, TV, comics, and desperately try to stay on topic. I am your host, Clark, a.k.a. the Reverend Michael Snakebite, and it is just me and Zelda in the house today. Well, actually, Murdoch is running around here somewhere, but I don't know where he is right now, but Zelda's sitting here with me. So it's going to be another solo top 10 episode right now. I'm not going to waste too much time on it. No particular reason other than just bored and wanted to put out some content. I was going to do some YouTube videos today and some streaming, but I'm having some camera issues, and honestly, I just need to get around to getting some new software for film editing and things like that, and I just didn't want to deal with it. It's been a crazy week. I know it's been a crazy year for everybody, but the last week and a half for me particularly has been extremely crazy. Very busy, a lot of work, a lot of crazy things going on at work, and I just wanted to sit down and bust out a recording. We did record, Kat and I recorded a full episode this past week, and it will be up soon. Probably actually, as I'm recording this, it will be up tonight, I would assume. And then this episode should come out on the weekend, hopefully. If you're listening to this now, this is the week of July 20-something. I don't really know what day it is now. That's how crazy my week's been. I think that's the 23rd today as I'm recording this. So look forward to a full episode coming out, probably tonight or tomorrow. And the episode, I don't know why I'm telling you that if this is going to be out of order. I just realized how silly that is to think. So hopefully you will have already listened to the full episode. So if you don't know how podcasting works sometimes, a lot of people will record a lot of podcasts in like 1 week or 1 weekend or 1 night or something like that. And just to have enough content to keep putting out for the next few weeks until you can, you know, get together and do stuff. So obviously it makes sense. But I don't know why I'm telling you that there will be a podcast coming out that'll probably come out before this one. I don't know what order they're going to come out in. We'll find out. We're just going to roll the dice on it. The topics don't match up, and there's no real news to talk about. So I don't think they'll clash if one comes out before the other. So what inspired me to do this one today is actually I was thinking about, it's kind of a weird little math thing here. I am not 50 years old, but I'm not actually anywhere close to 50 years old. But I realized that I have lived in 5 decades. So I was born in the 80s. I, for the most part, grew up in the 90s. I mean, I grew up in the 80s, but I also grew up in the 90s. I was in college in the 2000s, and the 2010s I was a working adult, and now we are in 2020. So yeah, I've officially lived in 5 decades, which is scary to say out loud, kind of. But it's a mathematical thing, so yeah. And what that got me thinking about was I've been wanting to do some more of my like personal top 10s, kind of, you know, as a get-to-know-us kind of thing anyway, and also just to, you know, put out there some of my personal favorite you know, top 10 lists of various topics, you know, in geek and nerd culture, pretty much what we cover. And so I thought about the fact that I've lived in the 80s, 90s, 2000s. That would be all of my nostalgia. You know, that's me born through high school, essentially. And then obviously going into the 2010s and to today, we talk about a lot of topics that are recent. But what I thought about was going through my favorite movies for every decade. I've been wanting to do like a top 10 favorite movies for a while, and I thought the best way to break it up was do it decade by decade. So I'm going to start with the 80s. Now, there are a lot of movies older than the 80s that I love. I absolutely love. Pretty much if I did a top 10 list of 70s movies, it would be all like B-horror movies. It would be all Halloween and Texas Chainsaw Massacre and things along that line. I love those movies out of the 70s. There would be others, obviously, too, not just those. But but seeing as I've lived in these decades, the 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s, and now 2020, I thought it would be fun to do my top 10 list of my top 10 favorite movies from each of these decades, or at least the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and then probably the 2010s. So I'll probably do 4 of these top 10 lists coming out over the next, you know, month or so. And it's just a fun thing for me to do, and hopefully it's fun for you listen to me just rant about some of these movies and what I love about them, and some of my nostalgia, why I like them maybe better than other movies that are objectively better movies, which when I'm looking at this top 10 list I'm going to do today, I can already tell you I've got a lot of notables and honorable mentions, and I've got a lot of reasons why I didn't put some movies on this list, and I'll explain some of those. So we'll squeeze out maybe an hour or just under an hour of this. I don't know what this is going to clock in at right now as of the beginning, but I'm going to try to keep it, once again, closer to the hour mark than the hour and a half like our full episodes. But obviously today we're going to start with the 1980s. So this is my top 10 favorite 1980s movies. Pardon me for clearing my throat. It is quite hot outside and dry, and it's kind of playing some hell on my allergies right now. So if you hear any kind of like sniffling or wheezing, that is definitely what it is. But yeah, without further ado, kind of give a preface on this list. It's pretty varied. There is not one real theme. There's action, there's comedy, there's drama. It kind of runs the gamut of all the genres here. And there, like I said, there's a lot of movies on here that I really wanted to put on here, and I didn't. And I just couldn't, because there's other movies that I like better, just flat out like better. They mean more to me. I'm more nostalgic for. Or they're just a better movie, and that's kind of the criteria I used to pick this list. Was, is it something that if it's on TV, I'm just going to leave it on while I'm, you know, playing video games on the other TV or doing stuff around the house kind of thing? Is it something that I can just always rewatch? Is it something that I can quote from beginning to end kind of thing? Those are the movies that I feel deserve to be on my top 10 favorite movies list, because they're ones that, even though I may have seen them a million times, they never really get old. And I can always find myself going back to them or being entertained by them whenever they're on. All right, so let's get started on this list, and I'll pick at some of the movies that I didn't pick as I go through this list, because a lot of them, I did a one per genre or one per series kind of thing, not genre really, but one per series, and a lot of these movies, it was kind of a toss-up. It was like, I could pick this one or I could pick this one, and one of them outweighed the other, and I wasn't going to take away spots from other movies that deserved it because I was so hung up on two movies from the same series or two movies by the same director with the same starring actor kind of thing. Very similar movies kind of thing. All right, coming in at number 10 is Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice came out in 1988. It stars Michael Keaton, Winona Ryder, Alec Baldwin, and Gina Davis. If you've never seen this movie, it's probably very weird to watch in 2020. It is a Tim Burton film, so it is very artistic, that over-the-top gothic style. And that's one of the things I love about it. That kind of style never scared me off. I was always drawn to it, even from a really young age. And it's definitely got my inner goth kid mark all over it. So it's definitely a movie that appeals to that side of me. But it is. It's dark. It's creepy. It almost has this playful approach to death and the afterlife. So it's very metaphysical. It's just such an interesting movie. I don't want to give away spoilers for a lot of these movies, because I do want people to go out. And I know we have a lot of younger listeners, like younger as in younger than me. Maybe those in their like early 20s or mid 20s, and maybe some of the you haven't seen some of these 80s movies. You know, at all. Maybe you're not a fan of 80s movies, or just had never really watched some of them, didn't grow up on them like I did. So I won't give like spoilers, but I'm going to give some plot kind of summaries here. So Beetlejuice is basically about this family. It starts off with Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis at the very beginning of the movie are killed in a car accident. And they live in this nice farmhouse out kind of in the middle of the country, nowhere. And they're killed in a car accident, and they basically wake up in the house as ghosts, and they are haunting their own house. They're not really haunting it yet, but they're kind of living in the house trying to figure out what happened to them. They understand that they're dead. They're learning more and more about what that means, and possibly where their parameters are, where their barriers are. Like they're locked into the house. They can't leave the house, but they can kind of cross over into the afterlife and talk to people there and get some advice. So it's like I said, it's very, very unique, very cool, interesting movie, very interesting take on like death and the afterlife. But this new family moves in, and They have a very dark gothic child who's played by Winona Ryder, who is probably in her teens at this time. She's probably like 16 in this movie, maybe, or 17, who knows. But she, I guess because she's kind of the goth kid, dark, and you know, she says in the movie something along like, I myself am weird, and something along those lines, like weird and something. And she's able to see the ghosts. She's able to see Gina Davis and Alec Baldwin. And at first she's scared of them, and then they kind of like want to talk to her because they're like, we need a link to the real world kind of thing. And she's like, kind of calms down and realizes that they're just a normal couple that were unfortunately killed, and now they're haunting their house. And in the process of wanting to drive her family out of the house, Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis's characters, they hear about basically a paranormal exterminator, I think is how they describe it, and his name is Beetlejuice, and he is a very malevolent ghost figure thing. I don't know. There's not a whole lot of backstory on why he is dead or what he was doing to become dead. He's very kind of grotesque looking. He has wild Doc Brown kind of hair, and he obviously looks like he's been poisoned. He has very pale skin, like with bulging veins and like yellowed teeth and everything. And it's played by Michael Keaton, and it's phenomenal. Great acting. Michael Keaton is a national treasure, and he acts the absolute hell out of this part. So, under warnings not to, the couple hire Beetlejuice to drive this new family out of their house, unwittingly kind of releasing him onto from his little prison to wreak havoc on the world. And he is a very, very mean spirit, and he does very mean, harmful things, and they never intended to hurt anybody, and now they have to kind of stop Beetlejuice with the help of the daughter, who Beetlejuice has now taken a fancy to, and it's just a wild ride. And like I said, if you love Tim Burton films, then this one has not aged. It'll be still great, because that weird kind of art style, even some of the puppetry and weird like special effects for the time, obviously would look funny to someone who's used to watching like Marvel movies, like MCU movies. But for a Tim Burton kind of movie, it strangely still works, because it's so out of place sometimes that it feels natural because it fits into that universe. Also, the music is great. It's just a really fun time. There's humor. It's genuinely scary. It's sometimes grotesque. So it's just such a good movie, because it's artsy, it's funny, but it's also kind of scary, and it's got elements of all of that horror, art house, drama, comedy. It's got it all. It's just a complete movie, and it's really a kind of a good testament to that, not only Tim Burton style, but just that like late 80s, early 90s kind of mood of getting darker and, like I said, that gothic kind of sense. As a side note, I was going to put the Batman 1989 movie, which was also directed by Tim Burton, I was going to put that in this spot. Beetlejuice, I chose to kind of choose Beetlejuice over, because I feel like that's a movie that I will watch more often. If it's on, it always intrigues me. I'm always fascinated by it, and I can always leave it on the TV. I use that as my criteria of which one would I rather want to watch if it was a lazy Sunday afternoon kind of thing. And at the end of the day, I would rather watch Beetlejuice, and that's why I chose it here. But I don't want to take anything away from Batman, because the 1989 Batman movie, also starring Michael Keaton, is phenomenal. Jack Nicholson has great performance there, and that one has a lot of nostalgia for me, because it's the first like comic book superhero movie that I can really remember seeing and like watching and taking in and just being like, you know, absolutely blown away by. You know, I would have been, gosh, not to give away my age like I usually do, but I'd have been like seven, I think, when that came, six years old, I think, when that movie came out. Yeah, and I probably saw it for the first time when I was about seven. So yeah, that's I give props to Batman. Danny Elfman, obviously the composer on both these movies. It's great. I just have to choose Beetlejuice at the number 10 spot, though, and it's edging out Batman just by a hair. So sorry, Batman, but Beetlejuice is taking the number 10 spot. Coming in at number 9 is The Princess Bride. It came out in 1987, stars Cary Elwes, who is also another national treasure. Absolutely love him. I've already seen a theme between this list and my 1990s favorite movies list. You will see a lot of the same actors come up several times. In fact, I'm going to make a kind of a note of how many times actors show up in some of these movies that I really like and either made the list or at least were my honorable mention. But you will see Cary Elwes again. And but The Princess Bride, getting back to it, is just such a great story, and it's so fun, and it's just everything of like a perfect fantasy bedtime story. It's just done so well on screen because it's meant to be that stereotypical bedtime story. I mean, it's literally written that way. It's being read to a kid in bed. But as it's being acted out on screen, it's got so much more life to it and humor, and it takes itself seriously, but is able to do it in such a fun, lighthearted way. It's just seamless between parody of fantasy stories and being one of the best fantasy stories, if that makes any sense at all. It's almost like a good D&D campaign. Like, you're having these inside jokes and laughs with your friends while you're trying to take a serious mission seriously. The best way to describe The Princess Bride. You've got this great cast of characters, and it really kind of turns some of the fantasy tropes on their head while still being fantasy tropes. You have the three criminals who are obviously, you got the small brains, the Sicilian, the brains of the operation kind of leader. You've got the big gentle giant who can wreck stuff but is very kind of soft-spoken and more intellectually like philosophical than he leads on kind of thing. You have the master swordsman, obviously, who is one of the criminals, but he's also out for his own personal revenge to find the man that killed his father. It's, you know, great trio there. Then you have obviously the princess that they have kidnapped and they're, you know, escaping with, running away with, and she's being chased down by the man she's supposed to marry and his, you know, troops, his knights, as like his soldiers, but he's really just marrying her for, you know, like the political lustful reasons and all. He doesn't actually like care for her. He's not going to be a good husband to her. Then you have Cary Elwes's character, who's obviously, he's the dread pirate. But he's basically, I don't want to give away too much, but obviously he's the true love of, he's the actual, princess, the mint for her kind of love. And, she wants him too, but he's disappeared. Now he's back and he's trying to save the day, but he's the dark horse outlier where he's hunted by the soldiers, but also hunted by the criminals kind of thing. Like, he doesn't have any allies. It's one man against it all kind of thing. And he's just trying to save the love of his life. And it's just so well done. And it's a great, great story. And, if you've never watched it, please do yourself a favor and watch it. You won't regret it. It's a great movie, still holds up. It's just such a good time. It's just super fun. And it's probably on this list, other than maybe, I would say, there's two others on this list that I'll say are a couple of the movies on this list are quintessential 80s movies, but Princess Bride is going to be the closest to like one of the feel-good 80s movies that people think of when they think of like John Hughes movies and stuff. This is not a John Hughes movie, obviously, but I didn't pick on my list, spoiler alert, I don't have any of the John Hughes movies. Like, I don't have any Ferris Bueller or Babysitter's Club. Babysitter's Club, Breakfast Club, or, 16 Candles or anything like that. I never cared for those movies. I do like The Breakfast Club, and I'll talk about it in my honorable mentions, but not to get too off topic now, you know, too early for a tangent. But yeah, those aren't, to me, the 80s movies that I really care for. That's Princess Bride at number 9. It may be shorted there a little low, but to me, honestly, there's other movies that I equate more to the 80s for me personally that I still to this day will watch over Princess Bride. Number 8 is The Karate Kid. Yes, the original came out in 1984. I really could have picked any one of the three movies because I do like all three of them. Whether or not you think that's cheesy, whatever, everyone teach their own. I love all three of the Karate Kid movies. Okay, not including the next Karate Kid and the remake of Karate Kid, and then obviously Cobra Kai, the show, which is also hilarious. I do like Cobra Kai. The next Karate Kid, I probably remember the least of. I was actually talking about it with someone the other day at work. I hadn't thought about that movie in a while. For the original trilogy starring Ralph Macchio and Pat Morita, I'm picking the first movie as the one that's going to make this list, and that's just because it's, to me, it's the, you know, just has the original setting down the story. It's the most wholesome. It's got the best character growth as far as Ralph Macchio's character, Daniel. I just think it's the possibly the better story of the three, because you actually see that development of him into a better fighter. They do it in two. They do it in three also. He obviously has to always get better to overcome the new, you know, new big bad opponent. But the first one, there's just something so pure about it. And I'll always love that movie. I do love the second one because it's set in Japan. I think that's a great movie too. But I mean, I could gush over all three of them, to be honest. But sticking to the first one, it's story of a kid, obviously, who's moving from New Jersey out to California. He doesn't fit in. He's the outsider. He quickly gets bullied. He wants to learn karate, but then he realizes that all the bullies are the ones that are taking karate. And so, yeah, he can't do that. So he starts getting trained by the maintenance man in his apartment complex, who is why did I just blank out? I just completely blanked out. I don't have any notes here other than my actual list that I made. So I'm doing all of this naming actors and stuff completely from memory. That's kind of how I like to do things, honestly. I should be more organized, but whatever. Mr. Miyagi, duh. Mr. Miyagi, obviously, one of the most famous wise men in movie history. I think a lot of us growing up in the 80s and 90s that are geeks kind of had Mr. Miyagi as kind of one of those philosophers alongside Optimus Prime and others as wise father figures that were giving us, you know, priceless knowledge. Mr. Miyagi takes on Daniel, though, teaches him karate, teaches him the infamous crane kick, and it all leads up, obviously, to the tournament, which is, I forget where they actually are living at, what the tournament's called, but it leads up to the karate tournament where he basically has to take on all the bullies, which are the Cobra Kai dojo, and he kind of has to fight his way through all of them until he gets to his arch nemesis, Johnny, who you will see again in Cobra Kai, the TV show, which is so funny. And I like how that show is kind of derived from a lot of people basically saying that Johnny maybe not as bad as, you know, it kind of started as a joke, I think, on How I Met Your Mother, where they were talking about, like, he's the real hero of the movie and not Daniel. And it's kind of exploded from there until now. It's actually got its own show where you actually get to see everything from kind of Johnny's point of view, and now Daniel might be is more of the asshole bad guy. It's just great. The whole explosion of the lore is hilarious to me. But yeah, the original 1984 Karate Kid, once again, good soundtrack, good music with it. I mean, it's very 80s, but it's still great. Every time I hear the theme song from it, I'm not going to sing it, but I'm the one that will fight for your honor. Whenever I don't know what the actual title of that song is, I forget. But anytime you hear that, I mean, come on, still a banger, still a great song. So yeah, check out Karate Kid if you've never seen it. It's a great movie. Coming in at number 7 is The Thing. The Thing came out in 1982. This is the first horror movie on my list. Not including Beetlejuice, which I don't really consider a straight horror movie. Obviously, it's a comedy first. I would say it's more comedy than anything, but The Thing is strictly a sci-fi horror movie, and I think I find myself really liking sci-fi horror movies a lot. Alien is one of my favorite movies of all time. It came out in 1979, though, so it will not make this list. Aliens came out in 1986, I believe, and it is a sci-fi action horror movie, but I didn't pick it on this either. I just don't like Aliens as much as Alien, and I will go into two movies in my honorable mentions that would have made this list other than Aliens also, that I thought about putting in this spot, but I chose The Thing over it. Getting back to The Thing, I really wanted a John Carpenter movie on this list, and as much as I love Escape from New York, I think The Thing still holds up as a better movie. The special effects are actually still incredible, even today, and that's nuts to think. 38 years ago, still holds up. Amazing. Obviously, you have Kurt Russell starring in it. He's great in it. The story, to give you the synopsis, is these explorers are in the Antarctic, and they are at this research base, and there was like this Norwegian, I think the Norwegians were down there first, and you see at the beginning, they're like shooting at a husky, which, sorry, Zelda, poor baby. But they're shooting at a husky, and the Norwegians are yelling at them to like saying, you know, like don't trust it. It's not a dog. It's something else. Basically, an alien ship is crashed and is under the ice, and I guess the Norwegians discovered it and let the alien loose, and the alien is able to mimic whatever it comes in contact with. So now there's an alien that's broke loose with the American research team that's there, and it is jumping from person to person. It's killing people off, and kind of assuming their identity, Mystique style. It's basically assuming their entire persona kind of thing. And they slowly are figuring out ways to find out who it is. It doesn't like fire. Obviously, it doesn't react to certain stimulus. It's only mimicking what it thinks human reaction is. And once again, I don't want to give away one of the best endings in movie history, because it's left very open on purpose, and there's a lot of good theories about it, but generally we kind of know, we have a good idea of what we think. I say we, the community kind of has strong opinions, but a lot of people have one particular opinion on how they think this movie ends, but it is very open-ended. It's never definitively said if the alien is found or not. Basically, lots of stuff happens. There's few survivors, and we're left not really knowing who is who, or if the alien is there or not. So it's good movie. It's like I said, special effects hold up to this day. It's got a creepy setting, even for me, who I hate like snow games and stuff like that. Yes, this takes place entirely in the Arctic, or the Antarctic, I should say, but I don't mind, because it's got so many good interior like set designs and stuff. But even though it's all in the cold and the snow, which is make it even more miserable for me if I put myself in their shoes, this is a great movie. I mean, it looks great. It holds up so well. It's great acting, and it's super tense all the way through. So definitely, if you're a fan of horror, you've never seen John Carpenter's The Thing, please do yourself a favor and watch that movie. So I don't know if I now want to say what movies I would have put instead of that or not. I guess I could touch on them real quick. The movie I would have put in this spot wouldn't have been Aliens, but it would have been The Terminator, which came out in 1984, another sci-fi horror movie. The reason I didn't put this one, which I also find funny, and Kat and I will do a series on this, but I find it funny that Aliens is kind of an action sequel to Alien, which is a sci-fi horror movie, and then T2 is one of the most quintessential action movies of all time. And it's the sequel to the original Terminator, which is more of a sci-fi horror movie about an unstoppable force. And it's also a great movie. I mean, it has one of my favorite actors of all time, and Michael Biehn, who will make... he was also in Aliens, but he will make another appearance on my 90s movies list. No spoilers there. But we'll see him again. But yeah, I just think The Thing is a movie that I identify with more, and I'll always watch when it's on. I'm fascinated by The Terminator, but I think the special effects in The Thing hold up better. And I think in 2020, it's still the better movie. It's the more enjoyable movie. It's just a kind of a better directed all around experience that new viewers could watch in 2020 and not be put off by maybe the dated kind of just effects and film and just general look of the movie. Definitely holds up better than Terminator. So The Thing is number 7. Number 6 is Clue. Clue came out in 1985. If you've never seen this movie, this is a great mystery whodunit comedy. So it is a movie based on the board game, Clue. You have all of the characters in there, Mrs. Peacock, Miss Scarlet, Colonel Mustard, Professor Plum, Mr. Green, Miss White. I think that's all of them. Yeah, that's all of them. And then obviously they're invited to a dinner at a mansion, and they don't know why they're all there at first, and they're slowly figuring out that they're all there because of blackmail. They all were kind of blackmailed into showing up to this dinner. Their host is killed off at the beginning, and now they have to figure out who killed the host, since all of them technically had motive. So now they're all trapped in a mansion with a killer, and they're trying to figure out who did it. It is hilarious. It stars Tim Curry, by the way, and Tim Curry's just amazing in every role he's ever taken. He really just, he goes 110% on everything. So he does it here too. He's fantastic in it. He's hilarious. I don't want to give away too much of the plot because it is a mystery whodunit. So it's kind of the Knives Out for its time, honestly. If you enjoyed Knives Out, watch Clue. It's an 80s version of that, kind of. It was also fascinating. It had three different endings, and they actually showed the movie at random with a random ending in the movie theaters when it came out. So people would actually come out of the theater and be like, oh, I can't believe this person did it. And they're like, what do you mean this person did it? And it's a different killer. And there's three different endings. And then the third, quote unquote, true ending is fantastic, how it's put together. Like I said, it is just a great movie. Do yourself a favor, see it. You can find it on DVD. I don't know if they have it on Netflix or anything right now. And if they do, it'll probably be the version that shows all three endings, with the third true ending being the last one. It's just so great. They basically will do an ending and then say, that's could have how it happened, or maybe it happened like this. And then it'll show you like the third ending. It's just such a funny movie, full of humor. Even when it's like scary and murder is happening, it's just got this cool vibe about it, this 1940s. It's set in like the early 50s or late 40s. It's post-World War II. It's got all the kind of that music from the era. They're all dressed in that kind of era's clothing. It's just a good kind of period piece movie. And it's just fantastic. I can't say enough good things about it. And that's a movie that for a long time I would just put on, and sometimes to go to sleep or anything like that, just because it was so comforting. It's one of those movies that you can just have on, and I know it so well that it's like a warm blanket. Moving on, number five is Back to the Future. So Back to the Future came out in 1985, once again part of a trilogy. I could have picked any one of these three movies, but I didn't have as hard a time with this as I did with The Karate Kid. I think The Karate Kid, the three movies are pretty equal across the board, with maybe the first one being a slight bit better than the other two. Back to the Future, I think, is a little more of a gap. There are people who will flat out argue that 2 is the best. There's some people that will argue that 3 is their favorite. And I don't think anyone's wrong, honestly. Whichever one you pick, I don't think you're wrong. But I'm picking the first one for the reason of pretty much just the kind of, I don't know if it's just, it's not straight nostalgia, but almost a sense of wonderment when that movie comes on, just getting sucked into that world, meeting, you know, Marty McFly, who's played by Michael J. Fox for the first time. Also, you meet Doc Brown, who is played by Christopher Lloyd, who is also in Clue. So he's made it on here twice. Maybe not the last time he'll be on here. Obviously, if you don't know what Back to the Future is, I mean, it's one of the biggest pop culture phenomenons to come out of the 80s. Obviously, Doc Brown builds a time machine out of a DeLorean. Marty gets in it to escape some terrorists and gets sucked back to the year 1955, where he meets his mother and father before they've actually met and like hooked up. And he's interfered with the time space-time continuum, and he's got to reset it. He's going to make sure that his parents get together so he doesn't get erased from existence. And he has to get back to his year of 1985. It's a fantastic movie. I can't believe it came together as well as it did. When you see some of the behind-the-scenes stuff about that movie, and it coming to, I mean, the time machine wasn't originally going to be a DeLorean. Some of the most iconic stuff was not going to be in the movie, and I just couldn't imagine that movie without those things. But, once again, great humor, great action. John Williams does the score. If you're a music person, I mean, John Williams, Star Wars, Indiana Jones, I mean, you know him. He's one of the most famous living composers, maybe the greatest, honestly. Robert Zemeckis directed it. If you're not very familiar with Robert Zemeckis, he's probably done more movies that you've seen that you don't realize. There will be another Robert Zemeckis movie on my 90s movies list. I don't want to spoil it, but I like teasing. Back to the Future. Like I said, I could have picked 2. I think there's something fun about the alternate universe in 2 that's really dark and creepy when Biff wins. And then I love the Wild West, so 3 obviously appeals to me with the ZZ Top cameo in it too and everything. There's lots of fun things about the third one. But I think the first one's where it's at. I think it's just more of what speaks to me about 80s movies and 80s action, humor, greatness. You've got Huey Lewis in the news, obviously, doing some of the soundtrack for it. Just so much great. Obviously, you have the whole scene where it's Chuck Berry, but Johnny B. Goode, he plays, you know, the whole scene where Marty Fly plays Johnny B. Goode at the prom. There's just so many iconic scenes and iconic looks in that movie. And then obviously the DeLorean will forever be in movie car. That should be a top 10 list I do, is top 10 favorite movie cars. I think the DeLorean will always show up in top 10 favorite movie cars of all time lists. I couldn't imagine a list without it appearing somewhere on there. Next on the list at number 4 is going to be The Empire Strikes Back. So yes, first Star Wars, well, only Star Wars movie that's going to be on here. So because I said one per franchise, I want to go ahead and say right out of the gate that The Return of the Jedi, I have more nostalgia for it, as it was the first Star Wars movie I remember actually seeing. I didn't understand it at the time, I was too young, but it was the first one I remember seeing. But now looking at it from an adult standpoint, I do like Empire better. Empire is objectively the better movie as far as actual script, acting, direction. Everything about Empire, I think, is superior to Return. I mean, I'm not saying it just blows it out of the water, but it is a better movie. It's arguably the best in the entire Skywalker saga, or maybe the best Star Wars directed Star Wars movie ever. It's great. It's got the awesome twist that no one saw coming, that everyone should know by now. Darth Vader's Luke's father. It just has so much going for it, and it's a movie that you don't realize. It seems so much longer than it is. There's so much happening that I constantly feel like that movie is like 3 hours long, and it's not, but it just feels like I get so engrossed in that movie that I feel like it takes forever. And I used to do that. I used to put it on in VHS, and I would play with my toys like Christmas time or November, Thanksgiving time. When I was on a holiday, I would just put Star Wars, the whole trilogy, in and just watch them through one at a time. And I always remember, for some reason, Empire feeling like I got the most done, like I was playing the most and I was having the most fun watching it and sitting around. And so I guess even from my early teens, when I first started watching, getting into Star Wars, like at age like 12, 13, is probably when I really hooked on to these movies and realizing that Empire seemed slow to me at first. And then I just more and more and more I watched it, the more I hooked into it and was just like, yeah, this is definitely the best movie. And I don't know what else there's to say. Once again, we got John Williams doing the score for it. The Imperial March makes its first appearance, a great song. It's more focused on the bad guys, so that's kind of fun. If you it is the one where the bad guys win, in the second part of the trilogy. So it's, if you like seeing more Vader and learning more about Palpatine and Vader and everything, it's just the goodness, the movie for you, I guess is all I can say. I don't know what else is there to say about Empire Strikes Back. I'll just mention that obviously the first Star Wars, A New Hope, came out in 77 or 76. I think it came out in late 76, but it generally is considered 77 when it came out. And Return came out in 83, and I love Return, but I couldn't knock Empire out and put Return on here. And even if I did that, I don't think Return should be number 4. I think it would be lower on this list. There's a few movies I would rather watch than it. But once again, Empire Strikes Back, anytime there's a Star Wars marathon on, I'm putting it on the TV and going about the rest of my business, but it's staying on that TV. So Empire definitely checks off the box for me for movies that I can watch again and again and again and never get tired of. So it's going to stay there at number 4. Number 3 is Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters came out in 1984. It stars Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, Ernie Hudson, and Harold Ramis. It also has Annie Potts as Janine, and it's got Rick Moranis as Louis Tully, and it has Sigourney Weaver as Dana, and Dana Barrett. And so, yeah, I just named a stellar cast, by the way. That cast is incredible, and they all do a great job, a great, great job. Their chemistry is amazing. The humor is absolutely spot on. I don't know how much of it was kind of, ad-libbed. They probably gave Bill Murray a lot of leeway to just kind of, go with lines and say stuff. Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis pretty much fleshed out the script and gave it a direction, and I think they just let the humor kind of take over from there, and they really just, their chemistry is so good together that it just is so organic, and that's probably why the dialogue feels so natural, as they were pretty much riffing on each other. There's, like I said, so many iconic things come from this movie in pop culture. We have the Ecto-1, the hearse. Well, I guess that was an ambulance, but ambulance hearse or whatever, the Cadillac, which, once again, wasn't originally going to be an idea in the movie. They were going to use something else, I think, for the vehicle. But that just works out. I mean, it's so funny that it's a hearse being the Ghostbusters kind of police vehicle. The tech, the science behind it actually is very smart. There's a lot of actual, I don't want to say science behind it, but like metaphysical ideas as far as Dan Aykroyd is very seriously into the paranormal. And so some of the terms they're using are actual terms people are like trying to use to explain paranormal, like certain ghosts. I'm not calling it science. I'm not calling it faith or anything. I'm just going straight with people who believe in ghosts, you know, paranormal investigators. They're using a lot of the real science and terms that these people use to back up these ideas. So there's a lot of research in that movie, I guess, that a lot of people don't realize. And then obviously with the Sumerian god, Gozer, which, don't even get me started on that. I love these movies so much. I like the second one too, but I don't think it's as good as the first one. The first one's still great. It just holds up. The rotoscoping effects are kind of cool still. I think they look good. Some people think they look like garbage. The humor is so spot on. It's a little raunchier than the second one. The second one's a little more family friendly. The first one, they're all like sitting around smoking in the firehouse, and there's more cursing and, you know, some more like, I guess, perverse insults and, things like that. So it's definitely not as kiddy as I remember it. It's almost funnier still as an adult, but, yeah, I just love that movie so much. And, I love these movies, the both of them, so much that, I had two of my, I don't know if I've said this on podcast, but two of my dogs were actually named Gozer the Gozerian and Vigo the Carpathian. They were both German shepherds. So I've obviously loved these movies enough to where they earned it into my nerd dog name catalog. But there's just so much I could go on and on and on about Ghostbusters. I love it. I have the Ecto-1 Transformer. What's his name? Ectotron. Yeah, I have that up there. It's kind of a fun little crossover homage on my wall of Transformers over there. had to get the Transformers reference in there. But yeah, I mean, Ghostbusters totally deserves number 3 because anytime that movie's on, I'm putting it on the TV. Once again, just kind of like Empire. If Ghostbusters is on, it's going on Ghostbusters. Love that movie. Never gets old. It's always entertaining. Love the humor. Love the action. And I'm kind of obsessed with paranormal stuff. I'm actually a skeptic. I don't really believe in ghosts necessarily. But I love legends and I love ghost stories. I love the history surrounding a lot of ghost stories. And so that's why I'm fascinated by it. So yeah, this movie just has everything I love. And, it's to me an almost perfect movie. If you want to know more about it, if you go to Netflix and watch the Movies That Made Us, and The Toys That Made Us is a great show too, but The Movies That Made Us, they have one of the episodes on Ghostbusters, and it's fascinating to see Dan Aykroyd's kind of take on how the movie came together. But yeah, let's move on. So I won't, you know, sit here and talk about Ghostbusters forever. Number 2 is going to be Raiders of the Lost Ark. So once again, I had a hard time with this because I love all 3 of the 80s Indiana Jones movies. Not a big fan of Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, but I don't even need to talk about it because it didn't come out in the 80s. I almost wish that Last Crusade had come out in 1990, so I wouldn't feel so guilty for leaving it off. This was a big toss-up for me between Raiders and Last Crusade. And some people might be thinking, what are you talking about? Raiders is obviously the superior movie. Yeah, it probably is. It was groundbreaking in film history for that kind of modern-day period piece adventure. You know, real action star kind of thing coming out in 1981. It was, you know, Spielberg and Lucas coming together and just really knocking this movie out of the park. It's so much fun. It's so well acted. Karen Allen obviously is great in it. Obviously Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones. It's just so much chemistry on screen. It's, even if some of the fight scenes aren't really realistic, it's so lovable. Like, it's just such cheesy popcorn eating like action, and it's got the history element to it that I love. It's got kind of the mystery of hunting down on the trail of the Lost Ark. It's one of the reasons I really almost wanted to pick Last Crusade better. I have a little more nostalgia for Last Crusade, but also I like the trail and the mystery. Like I like the solutions to the puzzles better in Last Crusade. Like it's more of a National Treasure style kind of hunt for the artifact, for the Holy Grail, obviously. I almost like it a little better in that regards. But Raiders is maybe the better shot movie, and it's got, I don't know, I don't know how to really describe it. To me, it's more of the fun action movie. Last Crusade does have some great action pieces in it, some really good action pieces in it. But I think Raiders maybe keeps the pulse up more continuously from start to finish. There's not a whole lot of real slow parts in Raiders, except for maybe some of the scenes when they're in the city and when they first get to North Africa. Some of those are a little slow to me before Marion gets kidnapped. And then immediately after, it slows down around that part for me for a little bit, but generally I love the movie and I don't have any complaints about it. Alfred Molina makes an appearance in the very beginning, young Alfred Molina, who's a great actor, obviously. I love him. He's at the very beginning in the tomb where they're getting the golden monkey statue and everything at the very beginning, and the boulder chase, which is probably one of the most iconic scenes in movie history. Yeah, it's just so much to talk about. There's plot holes in it, yes, and there's also the whole theory of, like, Indiana Jones would have gone the exact same way if he had never gotten involved, because the Nazis would have opened up the Ark and ended up, you know, obliterating themselves anyway. So they're saying, like, Indiana Jones didn't have any reason to actually exist. The plot would have gone the same no matter what, but I don't care. It's so much fun. And I love, like I said, the dynamic between, Marion, which is Marion Ravenwood, which is Karen Allen's character, and Indiana Jones. Even if it is kind of a dark backstory, it's never really explicitly said, other than the fact when she says the line of, you know, I was a child, but obviously they were lovers maybe when she was underage, or she was a student and he was a teacher or something. There's something definitely taboo there. Definitely something a little bit on the creep factor. There's a lot you could pick apart with this movie, but it doesn't change the fact that it is a great action movie. It kind of revitalized the action star for the next few decades, I would say. Actually, maybe up until today. I think anytime you see a movie where it's like The Rock is an action star, I think you almost got to go back to Raiders of the Lost Ark and see Indiana Jones. I think that's really the start of the modern action hero, before they got all big and beefy and they were all huge, like The Rock or like Arnold or Sylvester Stallone. I don't know. It's just great. And it's got the intelligent action star too. It's the one that knows all the, he's well read and knows all the answers and figures stuff out. He's smart and a fighter. And it's just such a great, character. And I love all the Indiana Jones movies, but this one I've got to put as easily my number two favorite 1980s movie. All right, moving on. I'm going to go ahead and knock out some of my honorable mentions before I say what number one is. So Breakfast Club would have been my only John Hughes movie that I would have put on this list. It's the only one I really, really like. Ferris Bueller's great, whatever, I can watch it, but I get bored with it sometimes, and I've seen it so much at this point that I don't really get hooked or invested by Ferris Bueller, and I don't, a lot of the humor's whatever, it's okay to me. It's kind of dated, it's kind of weird. I think some of the theories about Ferris Bueller are better than the actual movie itself, like thinking that maybe he's a figment of Cameron's imagination kind of thing, stuff like that. But John Hughes movies generally, I don't really do it for me, but I think Breakfast Club is the exception. I really like that movie. I love the whole character interaction in that, and it's so simple almost that it's all set in that, one room, the library kind of thing, and they do so much really without having to move around the set at all. It's like a brilliant budget movie almost. It's just got so much going for it, so much personality and great acting in it. Major League came out in 1989. I can always watch this movie. I think it's hilarious. If you're not into sports or particularly baseball, it might not be the movie for you, but there's some really funny humor you get, especially if you've played baseball or a big fan of baseball. There's a lot. Bob Uecker's hilarious in it as a real announcer for the Milwaukee Brewers, who is being an announcer for the fake Cleveland Indians. Not that they're a fake team, but they're a fake roster for the real Cleveland Indians in this movie. He's hilarious in it. His one-liners of a team that he has to be the announcer for, but he knows they suck. It's great. The whole story of that movie is obviously Cleveland Indians have been on a World Series drought, and they still are on a World Series drought since 1948 or something. And the city's getting fed up with them, and then they have to turn it around with a shoestring budget, and it's just a cast of misfits that come together and have to start winning as a baseball team, and it's hilarious. It is definitely a hard rating. It's not hard R, but it's rated R, and it definitely has a lot of cursing and some adult themes in it, so it's definitely not a kid's movie, but if you haven't seen Major League, check it out. Terminator, I mentioned. The Goonies. I felt really bad that The Goonies I didn't put on here. I love that movie. It's another fun adventure movie. I think if anything other than The Princess Bride was on here, it would be The Goonies. That would be the one I'd swap out, but I'm sticking to what I got. So it didn't make it. Sorry. Great cast. Fun time. Always an enjoyable movie. I'm not as hooked on it as a lot of people are. I like it. I just am not in love with it. Poltergeist. I'd say my other favorite horror movie, straight horror movie from the 80s. So The Thing is more of a sci-fi horror movie. Poltergeist and Friday the 13th, we've got a slasher and we've got a haunting movie. And I love them both, but I just don't love them both to replace any of the movies that are on this top 10 list. Top Gun, great action movie, great soundtrack, great original score, pretty decent acting. I mean, I get the appeal. It made me want to be a naval aviator. I'm obsessed with actual, I mean, I ended up being a military history major, and I love, you know, military aircraft and, you know, naval aviation. I'm obsessed with aviation in general. But yeah, I mean, it's awesome, but I don't think it really captures the spirit of the 80s movie as much necessarily. It's definitely a naval recruitment, like an hour and a half recruitment commercial. But it's fun. Blade Runner, I really seriously almost put on here. I like it. The reason I didn't put Blade Runner on here, honestly, is because I didn't watch this movie until I was in my, I want to say late 20s or early 30s. I didn't watch this movie until like the 2010s. And I can't remember exactly when I first watched it, like 2014, 2015, maybe somewhere around there. It's the first time I watched Blade Runner. And as much as I love the aesthetic, I love cyberpunk, I love the soundtrack, or score, I should say, I don't have the 80s attachment to that movie. I've never looked at it like an 80s movie. So I didn't put it on the list. Even though I love the movie, these other movies that I have on the list are just scream 80s to me, and I just love them. And I got to take them over Blade Runner, so sorry. E.T., I don't like E.T. There, I said it. Plain and simple, I've never cared for E.T. I don't really care for the movie. Never got it. Didn't get it as a kid. It didn't reignite something in me as an adult. I've just been so lukewarm about E.T. my entire life. I just don't care about it, really. I mean, I kind of appreciate it for what it is and respect it, but I don't like it as a movie. It's nothing I've ever been like, I need to go back and watch E.T. I think that's about it. I said Escape from New York, the 89 Batman movie. I pretty much hit on most of the ones. Oh, there is one more I'll mention, and it's my obligatory Transformers reference. Transformers, the movie, the 1986 movie. It would have been the only animated movie to make this list, sort of. That is actually a really good movie. If you're a Transformers fan and have never seen the 86 movie, you got to do it. So much of, like, even the Michael Bay movies draw from elements that are in that movie. It's the first appearance of Unicron. It's the first appearance of Galvatron. You see Hot Rod for the first time. You see really the passing of the torch of the new kind of, like, the new, I guess, stars of the show. Yeah, it was kind of meant to be an hour and a half commercial showing the new 86 toy line that was coming out and kind of brushing away the 84-85 line. Many of them come back, but not all of them. But it is full of death. It is a serious movie. It was I think the art direction is by the same guy who did Akira, which came out in 87, I think, or later in 86. And you can tell because the quality of the animation, I mean, it's legit anime at this point. Like, it looks really good. Transformers the movie is well done. The music is thrashing. It is 80s greatness. A lot of hair metal in there. The voice acting is as good as it's ever been. The dialogue is better than it was ever in the show. Like I said, there's serious stakes. People get killed in it. Robots do not come back. There is permadeath in this movie. Some of your favorites die. Like a lot goes on. It was traumatizing for a lot of kids. I remember seeing it for the first time and being like, holy crap. It's just such a good movie and totally worth it. I mean, anyone who has any interest in Transformers, especially any animated versions of Transformers, must go back and see the G1 movie. It is incredible. So, having said all of that, let's move on to my actual number one favorite 1980s movie. And it is going to be Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Who Framed Roger Rabbit, starring Christopher Lloyd and Bob Hoskins, came out in 1988. It is the half-animated, half-live-action movie where really incredible for its time that it pulled this off. And hats off to all the actors who had to act around cartoons they couldn't see. And they were, because this is an amazing blend of cartoons on live action going on at the same time. I mean, just look up anything about Who Framed Roger Rabbit if you want to see what I'm talking about. This movie holds up incredibly. The animation is so good on top of the live action. There's some legit scary scenes in it, some like horror moments. It's funny, obviously, and it is a mystery. It's a whodunit as well. It's an actual detective case. So it stars Bob Hoskins as a private eye who's been hired by a cartoon rabbit to find out if someone is sleeping with his also cartoon wife. Basically, in this universe, cartoons are stars, like in Hollywood and everything, and they can interact with the real world. So they're like movie stars, essentially, and toons can interact with real-life people. Not going to overcomplicate things here, but someone's blackmailing someone, things are going down, murders happen, and this private eye gets caught up all in the middle of it, and the whole point is this one cartoon character named Roger Rabbit, who's one of the biggest stars, has been framed for murder of his employer, and this private eye now has to figure out who did it and why they did it, because he's originally on the side of, hey, I'm just trying to get the job done, looks like the rabbit did it. And to now, it's like, something's fishy here. Someone's setting up this rabbit. I've got to figure out who's doing it and why they're doing it. And the rabbit hole, it just goes deeper and deeper. And the actual mystery, the whodunit part really like opens up and gets real deep and real complicated. And it's such a good private eye story. If you like, you know, if you like some of those old private eye noir movies, this one obviously isn't black and white, but it's a great 40s detective kind of story. A lot of real life stuff in it too. Like, it's kind of funny with some of the motives of the villain that you find out. It's actually got some real life, like political and like financial reason. It's actually very, very clever. And, yeah, it's just such a good movie that holds up so well. The acting is phenomenal. I mean, such an entertaining movie, really, for all age groups. It's good for adults. It's good for kids. It's just an incredible, incredible movie. There's so much I could say about it, but I don't even think I can put it into words how much I love this movie. And it is, for me, the quintessential favorite 80s movie. I don't think there's another movie I like better from the 80s. And it just holds up so well. I could watch it 10 times in a row. It's just amazing. So please do yourself a favor, and if you've never seen Who Framed Roger Rabbit, please watch it. So that wraps it up for my top 10 1980s movies. I will be doing my top 10 90s movies very soon. And once again, I don't know what order the podcasts are coming out right now, but we're trying to stagger it to where I do one of my solo 10s, and then a full episode with Kat, and then back to a solo. So this one might fall between a couple of full-length episodes. But I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you look forward to hearing my other countdowns. I've pretty much already got my 90s list done. And then I don't even know how I'm going to tackle the 2000s. But we will approach that when we get there. I hope all of you are staying safe, staying well. Don't stress out too much or work too hard. There's a lot going on in the world, and we all need to kind of come together and calm down a little bit. And I don't really know what else to say about that. Just good luck to all. Let's all stay safe out there. And yeah, you can find us on Facebook at HelloTangentPod. You can find us on Twitter at HelloTangentPod. You can find us on Patreon at HelloTangentPod. If you need to email us directly, it's HelloTangentPod@gmail.com. We will always answer your questions. We answer our Twitters. You can find Kat's personal Twitter is at DualOmniBlades. Mine is at RevSnakeBite. And yeah, we'll always answer questions or take suggestions. I love feedback. Let me know what your favorite 80s movies are. We also have an Instagram too, by the way, so check that out too. If you do want to donate to Patreon, we would love it. All that money goes right back into making the show better. We, like I said, are doing all we can right now during this crazy time to stay safe, but also get some material out. We'll have a lot of YouTube stuff that it's going to be coming up soon. We've really been trying to spin the wheels on that and get going. And yeah, it's been a fun time. So thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next time. Stay safe. Have a good one. Bye-bye. Realize that the world is mine and you're gonna die. This one.